As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Good morning. Welcome to the Daily Ding. Happy post-draft Thursday morning. We have all of your NBA draft reactions and hyperbole here. I'm joined by Mo Tequil. I'm joined by Andrew Schlecht on the ones and twos as the Daily Ding on the Athletic Podcast Network. But before we get into the show, I want to make sure that you don't miss the exclusive in-depth coverage of this unbelievable year in sports that we have had. 2020, it's still going. Somehow 2020 is still going. Basketball, it just ended. And now we're in the middle of the offseason. And then it's going to start up again in like 2 weeks. And you can get a subscription to The Athletic, and you can get every little ounce of coverage that we have on the never-ending NBA season. All you got to do is go to theathletic.com/dailyding, where you can receive an all-access subscription for just $1 a week. Sports are back. You don't want to miss any of these breaking news stories on your favorite teams. So you go to theathletic.com/dailyding, and that's where your all-access subscription is going to be there for just $1 a week. So coming up on today's show, the NBA draft, it finally happened. We've been prepping for this for like what feels like 10 years now. The longest pre-draft in history is over, and we've got about 24 hours to care about it before free agency starts. So we're going to get right into it. So I'm flabbergasted by what Phoenix has done at number 10. They took Jalen Smith, who is a very interesting prospect. He's a legit center size player, and he's a legit center style player as well, which doesn't make sense on a team that has DeAndre Ayton, but he is someone who could potentially be a really, really impressive pick and pop and also spot up type player who could have the potential to be able to attack off of closeouts and do a little bit of wing type stuff. As a defender, though, he pretty much just can, kind of protect the rim and be a shot blocker type. And so I don't have any problem with a team taking him at 10. I have a problem with the Phoenix Suns taking him at 10 because they already have DeAndre Ayton. So, Mo, how do you feel about this?
No, see, I'm on the other side of it. I don't feel like they've screwed up in that sense. One, obviously they have him higher on their draft board than anybody else for that matter, right? Like the way it sounds.
Not even his dad's draft board has him that high.
That might say a lot about his dad, but I think the ultimate thing is, though, they value him. Now, look, we can make the whole argument of maybe they could have traded down and got him. That might seem possible. We don't know what trades were out there, what was available and things like that. We didn't see a lot of movement just in general in the draft of like, I'm trading down or this or that. And in that area, I thought we might see that a bit, somewhere in the top 10. And it didn't seem like we saw that. So, for me, there's a reason why they drafted him. They like him. And they just, sometimes you just got to go get your guy, Jared. It's that simple. They did this last year with Cam Johnson. They took him too high. Everybody was shocked then. They got killed for it. Turned out to be a hell of a productive player for them, really killed, especially in the bubble, right? And I think for them, it's hey, let's go ahead and get it. Let's get a backup bid because it sounds like Aaron Baines isn't coming back. You know, they know they're going to need that. They want to re-sign Dario Saric, it seems, but there's no guarantees in that scenario. So you need to at least kind of start planning for that. And is the kid immediately ready? Maybe not, but, you know, it seems to me, how Phoenix drafts. They have a guy they want. They're going to draft him. You know, everybody else's mock board be damned.
So my pushback is that last year, the reaction to Cam Johnson, it wasn't that he wasn't good. It was that, I think, especially because of his age, a lot of people just didn't think he's going to grow that much more. And people kind of expected that he would be somewhat more NBA ready than most prospects. So it's not a surprise to see that he was solid in his rookie year. Now, the big question will be, how much more room to grow does he have? But the big thing and the big difference between that and this year was that you were at least drafting a wing that would complement your core really nicely and that you knew could have like a clear role with your team. But with this move that they've made, they're taking somebody. I mean, you just said backup center. This is the 10th pick of the draft. And they're passing on a couple guys that I think are going to be good starters with like really strong starter upside and guys that can already at least probably bring something decent to the table in Devin Vassell and Tyrese Halliburton. And frankly, two players that I think actually would also complement the core really nicely in Phoenix. So, you know, if those guys weren't there, if Kyra Lewis, the point guard out of Alabama, who Phoenix, I know right before the draft went down and visited with him. So, I mean, they were very interested, and I felt like he actually would have been a pretty optimal pick because I assumed Vassell and Halliburton would be off the board at that point and that Lewis would be the best player available, and he would be a point guard that even though obviously he wouldn't start right away because Chris Paul's there, in a couple years once he's actually really ready to start, then he could take the reins. All those plays made perfect sense from a long-term perspective. The Smith play doesn't really make sense from a long-term perspective, of course, unless they're moving off of Ayton, which I can't imagine that's going to happen, and it shouldn't because Ayton's pretty great, and even though I'll say for the rest of my life, they made a horrible mistake taking him over Doncic, which was something I was insisting on for a year before that draft even happened, they still got a really good player. So I just don't understand how this is supposed to fit with their long-term model, unless they legitimately long-term want to start two centers next to each other, which is certainly a possibility.
Well, when you look at the Western Conference, you know, you're looking at the Lakers, right? And they played big, right? I'm assuming they're going to try to stay with that model this next season. You know, you need to be able to have big guys. You need to have multiple big guys. I don't know if this guy, Smith, is going to be huge in that sense, and I understand you make all valid points, you know, and everything you say, okay, but like here's the thing, we're not in the Phoenix Suns boardroom, draft room, war room. For whatever reason, they didn't like those other guys, they like this guy more. And it's just, this is the funny thing about draft grades in general the next day that come out, right? Like we come out with this and you know, we do this, by the way, knowing that we don't know what these guys are going to be down the road for the next few years. And in terms of the Tyrese Halliburton, you know, backup, we don't know what free agency they have lined up. We know tampering goes on in this league. Come on, we got a podcast named
No
after
Way.
It. So
no way.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jared, to burst your bubble here a little bit and bring you into the.
Are you saying that Bogdanovich found out all of a sudden about this trade that he was agreeing to? And he was like, believe this, guys. I can't believe that you did something against the rules. I will not stand for this off of principle.
Yeah, no, but I just, you know, we don't know what the next moves lined up are, right? And we might find out as quickly as Friday, you know, and I think that's something that goes into account here in this. And look, I just find it interesting. Like, this isn't taking Anthony Bennett number one like the Cavs did. You know, several years ago when people didn't even know who he was for the most part. I think this is just one of those instances. They did it last year with Cam Johnson. And this is how James Jones drafts. He likes a guy. He thinks this guy can fill a need for them. He's going to draft them. And he's not going to care about the press conference, which, to be honest, I kind of like. I kind of find it refreshing. You know, will it lead to mistakes? Yes. Nobody bats 1,000 in the draft. You know, nobody nails it every year. There's always screw-ups and things like that. And this might be one of them. We might talk about it 10 years from now. But, you know, you just got to let it play out. I think sometimes we go too quick with this criticism, and I think it's a little bit unfair and unfounded this early. And I think this is one of those things where we're doing it here. And you know, everybody wants to say James Jones is crazy for this. And it's like, look, he found the guy. This is the guy he wanted. He went and got his guy. Who am I to really kind of go nuts about it?
Man, I mean, I will say outside of the top seven, I generally don't care how much of an overreach it is if you do get a player that pans out. Because if you look, if you go back, if you're like me, when you can't sleep at night, you just go back through Wikipedia pages of old drafts just to see, like, I wonder how many good players showed up in this draft. Honestly, after the top, like, basically eight, you're pretty lucky if you get a guy that's like a starter for most of his career. It's hard to pull off. So if that's the case, that's a hit. Absolutely. It's my only issue with it, and it's just such a huge issue. It's just that Smith is just a complete. It's like the one. It's one of the very few teams in the NBA where positionally it just does not fit. Because if you're drafting at 10, you're drafting for someone who's supposed to be part of your core rotation, and it just doesn't fit next to DeAndre Ayton in today's game.
I don't know if that's the case. If you're drafting at 10, that somebody is supposed to be part of your core rotation. I mean, part of your core. You know, it's somebody you want in your rotation for sure. But like when you talk about your core, that's not the same to me. And maybe I'm just getting lost in your fancy words, Mr.
Well, they Jared, got three
the amazing writer. But like, you know,
core's really complicated.
We got their corner pieces. I'm not a smart guy, Jared. We all know this by now. I've been on enough podcasts.
You host a show called Nerd or Hero, so you're definitely a smart guy.
Yeah, the other two. Well, no. Seth is smart. I'm not going to give Dave that. but I just don't think this is. I think we're making too much of it. Let's see how it plays out. This is a guy they value, and it's a, you know, he's stretchy. He can knock it down from three. Like, this is who they're looking at.
Classic Mo comes onto a draft recap show and says, "I'm not going to criticize anyone. I want to see how it plays out." So, everyone, years, and we'll see how we feel then.
That's how we should be doing this. So, in the 4 years, we'll talk about the 2020 draft. You ready to talk 2016 draft?
Ooh, that's actually an interesting idea. We'll save that for another show because it's a daily dig. You're supposed to be efficient. But I want to come on Nerder. We could do that later.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're making a great point about grades. I'm looking at, I'm just trying to find like just something to work off of. I've got CBS Sports' chart up, and I've got obviously the Athletics chart up. So I've got two different charts side by side, and they all have grades in them. And obviously you're like, I like this guy, but for instance, Tyrese Haliburton is getting an A+ grade for the Kings getting him at 12. Now, I mean, I had him at, I think, number 4 or 5 on my board in this draft. And I thought he was perfect for a team that already has a primary ball handler, because he's a complimentary ball handler who can do some great stuff. But while everyone had him pretty high in the draft, he fell. It wasn't like all the teams like forgot he existed, and he just like, and there, it wasn't like Detroit drafted Killian Hayes and they were like, "Oh, wait a second, I forgot about Tyrese Haliburton." Like, everybody passed him for a reason. There's a reason why these guys fall. Sometimes it's a Paul Pierce situation. You know, sometimes it's a Michael Porter Jr. situation. Tyrese Haliburton had an injury. Maybe that was part of the problem. That was something that was a concern with Aaron Nesmith, who it came out that the injury that he had that ended his season early this year, that was considered a bigger issue. And there was some concern he was going to fall way out of the lottery, but he ended up only falling to 14 to Boston. Onyeka Okongwu, He probably not fell. He ended up at six, and there was concerns about the fact that he has a fractured big toe, whether that would affect his stock. So, you know, there's a lot of concerns like that, and that's why there's some guys like David Dotson, who is a pretty well-known player that's expected to go in the second round. He didn't get drafted. There's, you know, rumblings that maybe there was a red flag there. Killian Tilly was someone that we knew was a medical red flag because he's just had so many huge injuries over his career. He's someone that's clearly a first-round talent, borderline even lottery talent. He went undrafted. So you never know why these guys are falling exactly. Like why RJ Hampton fell into the late 20s, even though most people thought his talent level made him as a borderline lottery guy. So there were a few of those that were really interesting in this draft. But aside from a few guys like Cole Anthony and Isaiah Stewart, two players that were a little underwhelming in college after being incredible in high school and some concerns about where they would fit in the NBA, them going like higher than a little bit most people expected, the draft was kind of straightforward.
Well, what did you feel about the Patrick Williams at four?
Oh, yeah.
Because I felt like that's where I felt, because this is what I thought, because here's the thing. I felt like that was the movie Draft Day draft pick that throws everybody off all of a sudden. You know, because then Denny Advia drops. You know, people thought he was going at four. He slips all the way to Washington at nine.
What a win for Washington.
Like, I think, you know, I think there was a lot of interesting stuff, but I think it started at four with the Bulls taking Patrick Williams.
Well, that, I mean, Patrick Williams going that high, because I have him as a late lottery talent, that threw off everything. I mean,
are you yelling at them the way you're yelling at Phoenix?
So here's the big thing. One, he at least fits in their rotation. Like, he at least, when you look at their other young pieces, when you look at their core, which is a little less clear than Phoenix, where Phoenix, they have three all-star talents there. So at least it's like very clear who were the guys right now. With Chicago, they have like five guys that are good, but we have no idea what they're going to get out of them. But there's a very clear lane that he can fill. It is so much in theory. He's like one of the most hypothetical prospects that we've seen in the draft in a while, because he was the sixth man at Florida State. He has this like really cool pull-up game, but it's all from 15 feet. It's like, if he starts doing that in the NBA, everyone's gonna be like, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, don't even guard it. Just like, let him take the shot. No one cares. So he's like got a bunch of stuff that he like kind of seems like he could do really well. But we haven't seen anything even really close to it yet. But everyone that sees him in these draft workouts insists that he's killing it and that he's blowing everyone away. And it's funny. The dude was literally outside of the lottery, I would say, probably on most boards, maybe as recently as a month ago. Probably a week ago, but a week feels like a month in NBA time this year.
Yeah. Well, in pandemic years, it's a whole
different deal. I feel like probably 2.5 to 3 weeks ago, I think he was still like outside the lottery, basically. And then every day, it's like a new number moving up and up and up. I can't believe he went all the way up to four. I can't remember a player ascending up the draft board in that manner. And it's not just like Jerome Robinson a couple years ago kind of coming out of nowhere to become a late lottery pick. Cracking into the top four, that's like that's you know, the incline gets steeper and steeper and steeper as you get that high. So that was remarkable. I mean, you look at the guys that he was taking over, like Isaac Okoro. Isaac Okoro is kind of a similar player in a lot of ways. I think it's a little more clear what kind of player he's going to be, but he doesn't have the shooting upside that Patrick Williams has. I wouldn't draft Patrick Williams over Okoro. Patrick Williams, I think the metaphor I used was that it's like buying the chassis to a Bentley without the engine inside of it. So, like, you're hoping you can get like a powerful engine to put that in there and make it work, but you're just buying what you see from the outside, and you don't actually, it's all window dressing at this point. It's all hypothetical at this point. But can you act? It looks like it could be a 500 horsepower car. But what happens when you take it off, or take it off of whatever they call those trucks that transport those cars across the highway? What happens when you put it on? You try to turn the keys in the ignition. Is it actually going to rev anything, or is it a dud? So it is an absolute swing for the fences in a draft where, from a need perspective, there weren't necessarily any guys that would be like a clearly a safer pick from Chicago's perspective.
Yeah, I just thought it was a reach there in that sense a little bit. But again, when you select, this is the guy you want, you take him, you know, and that's it. And if there were opportunities to trade down, then they should have done that. I don't know if there were. That's the hard thing. You know, we don't know what it was. Again, not a lot of movement in the top 10 in terms of that. I thought the top three was pretty good. I think we all kind of expected Anthony Edwards to go one by the time the draft started.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Just in terms of fit, he was the right player for Minnesota to take. Wiseman, obviously, you have Towns. Ball, you have, you know, D'Angelo, so it would have been kind of weird. Wiseman going to Golden State wasn't bad. I like LaMelo going to Charlotte. I think that's a good fit for him.
Yeah, I LaMelo and Charlotte, I don't know if it's great for him, but it's great for Charlotte. And you got to be – it's really exciting that the Charlotte Hornets, for the first time in maybe like their history, have a truly elite talent. Like, no more drafting good role players towards the top of the draft.
Kemba Walker takes drafted so many, and you should know better because you are in Boston. Kemba Walker's a bit
Kemba's my guy, and
not after you just heard what you said.
So let me maybe backtrack a little bit.
I've already texted Kemba. It's too late.
Well, the point I meant was that they drafted a top five pick and they got a top five quality pick. Like, they didn't Cody Zeller it. They didn't Adam Morrison it. They didn't MKG it. Kemba, who was the eighth or ninth pick in that draft, he obviously was phenomenal, and he's given them everything that they gave that franchise everything that they could have asked for. And LaMelo is finally the guy that they drafted, and I think that from at least a talent perspective, they hit an absolute home run there. So if I have to give out an A+ on draft night, I'll give it out for LaMelo. It doesn't matter that their two best players on the roster last year were both point guards, because I think they're gonna probably trade Devontae Graham and Nick Batum together for Gordon Hayward or something like that. And then put Terry Rozier in charge of being the defensive point guard. And then Rozier, he can be a really good spot up shooter. He's actually pretty deadly as a spot up shooter most of the time. So I think him and LaMelo can play off of each other pretty well.
Especially with LaMelo's vision, I think he kind of just raises the level of everybody else on the court in terms of helping them get easier shots and so on.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the big thing that I think the Hornets are missing, was besides just having someone who's who could really truly score from the outside and carry an efficient offense, instead of throwing up 10 threes a game and hoping a bunch of them go in, which is what their guys currently were doing, they didn't have somebody that could really run the offense. Rozier, that's not his strength. His strength is being a pull-up score and a spot-up score. So they're going to be interesting, considering all the different weapons they have with Miles Bridges, PJ Washington. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody. Willie Hernan Gomez, all the big weapons that they have there to put LaMelo around. But let's move on to the Warriors situation, because there's something really good that happened and something really bad that happened. So the James Wiseman pick, even though I'm higher on Onyeka Okongwu for 90% of the teams in the league, I actually think that Wiseman is probably a better fit for them, and they can certainly afford to take that kind of home run swing with Wiseman. So that'll probably be a pretty great decision long term, and it takes the pressure off of them to rely on Draymond Green, who they may not want to pay again once his next deal runs out. But the question is where do they go from here, because Klay Thompson, he has what nobody wants to say is a torn Achilles, because they don't even know, but it certainly sounds like the imaging is going to confirm, maybe by the time this show is out, that he has a torn Achilles and assumedly will be out for the season. The hope is that it's just some sort of severe sprain, and hopefully it won't, take him out for the year. But the Warriors, I guess, have to figure out, what do we do this year without Klay Thompson?
Yeah, that's the really challenging situation. They have that trade exception. It's a question of do they look to try to use the trade exception to bring somebody in? I don't think they were going to use it beforehand. It's $17.9 million, and just for kind of a quick primer for everybody, you can't break that up. You can't just use, $3 million for this trade, $4 million for the next trade, or whatnot. It would be fantastic.
And you can't send anyone out with it too. You can only use draft compensation to sweeten the pot.
Right. And so they're in kind of a tough situation. And then on top of that, you're basically taking more salary on, and they're already way over the tax in this scenario. So they're in a tough, really incredibly tough spot. Jared, I don't know what the hell they do. I mean, even if you go into free agency to just say like, okay, we're going to use our, the I think they have the mini mid-level or the taxpayer mid-level or whatever. Mid-level. I think they have like taxpayer mid-level at 5.7. So I think they're in a situation now where it's like, okay, now we're in the, do we bring back Glenn Robinson? Do we, you know, you're in the bargain basement area trying to find wings now to just replace a quarter of what Klay Thompson is. I just think that, first off, injuries suck. Hopefully it's not what we think it is, but like, it's just a bad situation for them, and I don't know how they recover from it.
Well, the big problem for them is that last season, everything worked out because they bottomed out and they got James Wiseman. And that's not to, you know, you're able to get through 1 year and it worked out. You can't really do it again when Steph's back.
I mean, it's just, how many more years are you going to waste with these guys?
Yeah, but then how do you win this? I mean, I guess they'll be a playoff team probably, but they're not going to be super competitive. They're definitely going to put a lot of pressure on Andrew Wiggins to perform, that's for sure.
Well, this is the time now, right? Like, we're going to find out really how good is Andrew Wiggins, because this is the year he has to step up. Plain and simple. Like, it's unfair and at the same time fair. He's getting paid a massive amount of money. It's time to put up or just shut up at this point. And so this is it right now. It's all on Wiggins, and it's a lot of pressure to put on those skinny little shoulders, but he's going to have to figure that out, because he's got to come in and he's got to defend at a higher level than he's ever defended before, and he's got to be more productive on the offensive end than he's ever been.
He owes it to America, because we've waited so long to see him just get it together. And you're going to be on the floor with Draymond Green and Steph Curry, and if you can't get it together at that point, then you got nothing to offer at that point. You're not. I think he'll turn into Jabari Parker real quick if that's the case. It's going to be like turning into the pumpkin at midnight. He's gonna be, you know, flying out of the league real fast if he doesn't step up.
Well, he's still got what, 3 more years on that deal, or 4 more years? I don't fully know off the top of my head.
At a certain point, Adam Silver's just gonna invoke the mercy rule and just let the teams out of
bring
it.
Back the amnesty clause. Let's go.
All right. Well, here's a team that I don't think is gonna need the amnesty clause, and it's Detroit, who. Troy Weaver takes over as GM, somebody who is very, very highly regarded, out of the Sam Presti mold. And we'll get to Sam Presti in a minute, because another great – it's always a great night when you're Sam Presti. You're always having a good time. But so Detroit, they ended up trading away Luke Kennard in a three-way deal that sent Landry Shamet from the Clippers to the Nets, which is a very interesting pickup for the Nets. I like it a lot. Luke Kennard goes to the Clippers, which I love for the Clippers. And then Detroit drafts Sadiq Bey, who is very similar to Luke Kennard, like a very, very similar player. I think Luke Kennard's a better pick and roll playmaker, but like very similar type of player. And that makes me wonder, it's very clear that they weren't going to pay Luke Kennard next year when he hits free agency. I had been told that they were looking for 2 draft picks for Kennard back at the trade deadline. So the fact that they ended up getting a mid-first round pick and then drafting a player that's pretty much the same as the guy that they're getting rid of, who's 3 years younger, and you got him for 4 years now in a pretty cheap contract, some pretty solid business there by Detroit. And then they also end up getting Isaiah Stewart out of Washington, who is someone who is relatively low on most draft boards because it's not very clear what his offensive and defensive fit in the NBA is going to be. But for one, the dude is like Hercules, and he has this incredible motor, is a really beloved locker room guy. It just seems like you're drafting him for the culture, basically, and you're drafting him for the energy that he plays with. So all of that, plus Killian Hayes, who was my favorite player in this draft at the 7th pick, Detroit had a very interesting overhaul. Do you have optimism for the Detroit Pistons now?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that's interesting. Like in that Kennard trade that you're talking about, they basically got rid of a guy they're not going to pay next year and got several years of control on a rookie deal and a guy they like. You know, and then the Killian Hayes stuff, they got a point guard, something they kind of need. They're rebuilding right now. under Weaver's, you know, eyes. This is his chance to put his fingerprint on the team, and they made a lot of interesting moves in that sense. I thought the trade for to get the 16th pick from Houston, pretty good. They've ton of protections on that pick, which might make it more difficult in the future in terms of draft picks, but also it's something of like they're going to be holding on to draft picks for a while. That one's not conveying to Houston till like 2028 or whatever.
Plus they got Trevor Ariza, so they're a title contender for the next 3 years.
Yeah. we'll just leave that part alone. but I think ultimately, you know what, like they came in, they need talent. You know what I mean? Like it was just one of those things of like, they needed to start getting younger, finding talent, unless the only way they could have truly hit a home run is if they found a way to get Blake Griffin off their books, which was, I don't think, fully possible. But, you know, this was a good opportunity for them to make some moves. So coming away with three young guys that they like at this point, can't really be mad at them. They made moves, and they're beginning to kind of take shape, which is kind of important in the first year of Weaver and seeing how this whole thing plays out. The one thing that does suck is they kind of took themselves out of the Fred VanVleet race.
Is that race over before it even started?
Probably, but like if they were in it, if they were in it at one point, they definitely took themselves out of it by taking on Ariza's contract.
The Knicks still are in the game, right? They need somebody to throw the ball to Obi Toppin now. And
oh man, I'm still thinking it's going to be Russell Westbrook. And,
well, they need someone to play defense. So,
well, that might not be Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that the Knicks took Toppin. I mean, for one, you have to be represented by CAA if you want to go to the Knicks in any capacity. We know this now. I'm sure whoever, do the Knicks even have a mascot? And if they do, I'm sure it's rep by CAA. Do they have a mascot? I have no idea.
Do we know who Spike Lee's agent is? What is he?
He's with WME, actually. Or UTA or whatever it is.
Would have made the joke perfect if he was with CAA.
He actually is in Rich Paul on the board there now. So Rich Paul should be hopefully Spike Lee's agent now. But so Toppin is someone who I had really low on my board because he's a bad defender and he has no defensive role in the NBA at this point. And at his age.
But you know what?
He's
the modern big, though, offensively.
But the point is that he's on a team with Mitchell Robinson now. And if you're a team that wants to take on a guy like that, you can get away with it if you have the ultimate backstop. And I'm not crazy about Mitchell Robinson. I think he's a little bit overhyped. But the dude can shut down every single thing that happens near the rim. And you got to give him credit for that. So I think it's a very ambitious... It's a play by New York. And to their credit, I feel like offenses win championships at this point. With the way that the rules have been altered over the last couple of years to make it almost impossible to play defense, I like the idea of these teams leaning in and trying to go more offensive focus. You want to have two-way players so that you have balance, but if I have to choose between a great defender and a great offensive player, I think most of the time you're going to lean towards a great offensive player. And Obi Toppin, I'm not sure if everything that he does is going to translate really well to the NBA, but the dude's going to be a bucket getter and a half. We know that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think he's kind of what you would look for in terms of a modern big. You know, I think when you kind of see his setup, I think he can shoot the three ball. I think he can roll to the rim. He's crazy athletic, right? Like, there's no question about that. His defense is everything you said about his defense was right on. Definitely problems there and all of that. But he's the offensive modern big. And I think, you know, he's shown a passing touch, you know, that I think is going to translate where he's really going to be successful when he learns how to do the short roll action, right? Where he rolls short and then it's with Mitchell Robinson. It's either throwing the lob to him or hitting somebody in the corner for a three. Like, I think there's opportunities for him on the offensive end. And I think that's, you know, again, like you said, pairing him with Mitchell Robinson covering for him on the defensive end kind of makes it palatable, you know, a little bit where you can just deal with it, you know, and live with that in this scenario. So we'll see what happens with him, but I don't think that was a bad pick. I just think, you know, again, I mean, people were talking about him going to maybe Cleveland at five, you know, like he kind of slipped a little bit in that area. So I just think, again, it's interesting, but I mean, the Knicks are the Knicks. They'll find a way to nick this up.
It's very true.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, so stay in the division there. One of the best nights on draft night, I think, that came in Philly, where they had the Horford deal. They managed to get off of that contract before. I think that deal's still being finalized. Then they managed to get Tyrese Maxey at 21, which is, I think, a very good value pick. Gives them something that they've really been needing, which is somebody that has a pull-up game from beyond the three-point line and has three-level scoring capability without being a black hole like an Alec Burks type, and can actually play two ways. So he gives them a lot of what Josh Richardson gives them, but I think with even more deep shooting capability. The problem is, how do you have a guy like that on the same team with Josh Richardson? Well, you don't. You trade away Josh Richardson for Seth Curry, one of the best shooters in the NBA. Someone that they can put at the one spot and can defend point guards fairly well and then space a floor for you enough so that you don't have to trade Ben Simmons for James Harden, even though I still would like to do that if I were Daryl Morey. So I got to say, for a first-year GM and a first-year coach, Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers, these guys seem to know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's almost like they've had success in other places before. No, I liked everything about Philly's day, from it starting off with them getting off of Horford's contract and that costing them a first round pick, and then sending a second round pick to get Danny Green in that same trade.
I forgot about that part. Yeah, Danny Green.
I think that's huge for them, you know. And, you know, Danny Green, he's on the downside, I think, of his career. It's not, you know, we saw how he played in the playoffs. He was a very productive player for the Lakers, not quite the defender I think his reputation gives him anymore, but still pretty solid, makes the right rotations and things like that. But here's my favorite thing out of everything Philly did. They started to build around Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid in a way that makes sense, right? We saw it last year. Horford, and I was guilty of this. I was stupid last year, and we can argue in a few weeks if I'm still stupid. But, you know, I was like, okay, I get it. Horford's not a perfect fit. The offense is going to be clunky, but they'll figure out how to put a whole defense together that makes it impossible to score and all that. Way wrong on that. Josh Richardson didn't pan out. All of these things just didn't work out. And now they're kind of just building a team now that makes sense. All the pieces make sense. Ben Simmons is still going to be the main ball handler, you know, and you're going to start Seth Curry, but you have another guy in Seth Curry, a guy who can spread the floor, Danny Green, who could shoot. Everything you said about Maxey being a triple level scorer. You know, I obviously still have Joel Embiid. Tobias Harris, who had his most success in the NBA under Doc Rivers, is there now, you know. And then my favorite guy, they still have Matisse Thybulle, you know, who just does an unbelievable job on the defensive end, making steals that we still sit there going, like, I have no idea how he got to that pass, you know, and things like that. I think there's good things going. There's still a while to go in what they got to do and how they got to build all this stuff. But it's refreshing to see this team finally start building a team that makes sense.
I love a team that gets Seth Curry, because Seth Curry's like, that's when you bring that player in, that's kind of a signifier that you're taking it seriously and you're willing to not be flashy to get someone that's very efficient, recognizing value. That, I mean, I guess he's probably no longer underrated, but he was definitely underrated, and Dallas did a great job of really mining the value out of him. So let's end where it all began for the night, and that's with Minnesota. So not only do they take Anthony Edwards first overall, they managed to make some nice moves, I thought, at the end of the first round, where they make a deal with New York to get Leandro Bolmaro, the Barcelona. I list his position as wizard because he's just a ball wizard. The dude's like Pete Maravich with the Spanish accent. I mean, he is so much fun to watch. I don't know if he'll ever be anything more than a highlight maven, but like the guy can do some pretty remarkable stuff on the floor. he can throw passes that you like pause and rewind over five times, and you're still like, there's just no way that he possibly could have known that guy was going to be there. And so, hey, maybe he's like Manu Ginobili. Maybe he just sometimes throws the ball out of bounds because the person's over there. But that's what these Argentine guys do, and I freaking love it. So they got him, and they got Jaden McDaniels at 28. So two players that have major boom-bust potential. Jaden McDaniels is somebody out of – he's like basically a 6'9 wing out of Washington who has a potential to be a – he's like Michael Porter Jr. or – Jeff Green, if Jeff Green like just never dribbled the ball for his entire career. So we'll see what happens there. Jaden McDaniels, there's a huge range there, but the upside is legitimately all-star upside. So I love them taking those swings on two long wings that can do two different things at a really elite level that may not ever pan out in the NBA. But if either of them hit, it gives them something really special at kind of the one spot in that core of their future rotation that they don't have in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think they're kind of just filling everything out. You know, late in the draft, you're not always going to – those guys don't always pan out to be really solid rotation players and whatnot. But you're swinging for the fences there a little bit in the sense of you're hoping these guys will come in immediately and help you. I think they're just trying to make moves, and I think they're filling out their roster and trying – again, they're just trying to make everything – make the pieces make sense. You got to build around Cat, and you got to build around D'Angelo Williams – excuse me, D'Angelo Williams. Jeez, what am I doing? D'Angelo Russell. And I think that's the game there for them. And, you know, all these guys, if they hit the – not even the ceiling, just the room. What's the middle spot between the ceiling and the roof? Like, what are we? I'm sorry, the ceiling and the roof.
He's got to get the crawl space above the ceiling.
The floor and the ceiling. What are we doing?
Yeah, we're in the room. We're in the room.
We're in the room. If they can just get in the room.
Just get on the couch.
That's a good thing, right? Yeah, if they're just chilling on the couch, you know what I mean? I think that's a successful move there for them. And I like the moves they made overall. Again, Anthony Edwards being the top pick, I think fits everything they're doing. And if he's actually the guy, like if he ends up being really kind of showing off his talents and gets over those low motors and stuff like that, that's a hell of a three-core piece right there with those guys. And I think that's something that can really help them. And, you know, for them, their goal is to try to get in the playoffs right now.
Yeah. And you know what? Well, I think their goal is to put enough talent around Cat that he feels like he's actually screw what Cat thinks. Get enough talent around Cat so that Cat can prove that he's worthy of his status, because he hasn't done enough to be to carry this team into contention. And you know, Anthony Edwards, I'm not crazy about his game. I'm not crazy about him being my lead scorer, but he certainly has a pretty great scoring package. The one thing I love about him is listening to that dude talk. You know, I had a presser with him earlier today. I must have seen five interviews with him. He is so charismatic. He is so much fun to listen to. It really is. I love listening to him talk. It's funny. He talks about being a football player because he kind of reminds me of like a receiver or a cornerback, where he has this ability to just like run his mouth nonstop, but with this like smooth kind of rhythm to it and this like a ton of confidence, but without being like a douche about it. And I love hearing the dude talk. So as bad as that ESPN profile on him made him look, if I sat in there with an interview with him, I would be so captivated by him, I wouldn't even really care what he had to say.
You'd have hearts in your eyes. That's right. the whole deal.
I can see why Rosas and the crew were sold there. I mean, the dude is so much fun. I would love getting to work with him. I would love showing up to work with him. If I needed someone to like join me in the trenches to try to win the title, I'm a little bit worried about that. We'll see how that goes. But I definitely would have a lot of fun showing up to work.
If they think they're going to win the title in the next 3 years, the Minnesota Timberwolves have a lot of problems. They're a while away from contending.
But here's the thing. They might have fixed all those problems because culture is a huge part of it. And what did they do? They traded for Ricky Rubio. Ricky's back. He's back home. He's back where he belonged. As John Krasinski told me earlier tonight, my boys come home. And so Actually, I can't remember what he said, but it was something like that. I'm like, oh, I'm so happy for John. He's put up with so much.
Do we think John orchestrated the trade?
Probably.
Do we think John? I'm curious if that's what.
Honestly,
happened.
I'm pretty sure.
I don't even know if Rosas knows the trade has been made.
I can't think of a single beat writer in all of the NBA that like controls their beat more than John Krasinski does. The dude's an absolute force, an absolute legend, and I talked to somebody in Minnesota front office last night for you listening, and they said bringing Ricky back was about culture. He's so vital to literally not just like setting the tone and the way that the team works, the way, you know, the accountability stuff, but like he's out there on the court giving guys instruction on stuff. I remember there was a clip going around Twitter just the other day about how I think it was like DeAndre Ayton used the wrong post move on a pick and roll, and they showed like Ricky going up to him and telling him, next time I feed you there, make sure you do a spin move through the lane. And sure enough, the clip shows next time, spin move through the lane, and Ayton still blew it, but because of the move, he was right in position to clean it up. So it's just like, you can see, like, having Ricky Rubio on your team, you're going to make everybody better. He's a vital part of player development. And I'm really excited about a lot of guys like D'Angelo Russell learning how to play defense, maybe, with Ricky Rubio there. Anthony Edwards becoming a
easy on D'Angelo Russell learning how to play defense.
Okay, D'Angelo Russell knowing what defense is. Well, you know. But D'Angelo Russell acknowledging that defense exists. How about that? So I'm excited. I'm excited about Minnesota. I'm excited to have Ricky Rubio back where he belongs. You know, David Kahn is finally vindicated once again, which is all that matters.
No, don't you dare. Don't you dare picking Johnny Flynn over Steph Curry. What's wrong with him? That's a good one. I actually almost kind of forgot that part of the trades, just because so many things have happened in the past few days, my brain is broken. I like that for them. I do like the idea of bringing him in. And Ricky's the ultimate glue guy and kind of keeping everything together and things like that. But there's only so much he can do, man.
That's very true. So Ryan Saunders is in for a lot of work this year. We'll finish on the most important news of the night. This just came in 2 seconds ago. According to Chris Haynes of Yahoo, undrafted free agent Jordan Ford of St. Mary's, the WCC leading scorer and 12th in the nation, has signed an Exhibit 10 deal with the Los Angeles Clippers. I got Mo on the show, so I got to finish with some Clippers news. That's how we do it here on the Daily Dirt.
Really? That's the news we end on after everything? I mean, granted, I'm wearing a Clipper sweatshirt from when I used to work there, but like that's how we ended
here on the Daily Ding, and that's going to do it for today's show. So don't forget about the other basketball shows across the Athletic Podcast Network. We still have all your favorite shows like the Athletic NBA Show featuring Murder, She Wrote. No, Nerder, She Wrote. That's what it's called. No Dunks and House of Strauss, plus over a dozen team-specific shows available from some of your favorite Athletic beat writers, such as Mo DeKeel's partnership with Kelly Eco on a show that, at least until this season, was called Brody and the Beard. And I'm very interested.
I like to refer to it as the podcast formerly known. Right now, it's still Brody and the Beard because they're still there. But when they get moved, it might just be, and I'm campaigning for this, the podcast formerly known as Brody and the Beard.
All right. Well, if you want to hear that podcast, you're going to have to go into the app, or you can go to wherever else podcasts are sold for free, of course. But if you want to get notifications for new episodes and you want to utilize the podcast episode comment section, that's why you go to the Athletic app. Plus, we got real-time briefs in there. We have the headline sections in there, all sorts of really fascinating stuff going down in that application. And if you're not a member of the Athletic, you're in luck, because you can get all of our podcasts ad-free, plus some fantastic writing from across all major sports, all for a super low price. It's cheaper than buying a second round pick in the 50s just so you can sign a guy to a two-way deal. All you got to do is you get a subscription today at theathletic.com/dailyding. You never know when these promos end, so you better get there soon. And as always, thank you for waking up with us, or in our case, not going to bed, because it's draft night, it's free agency season, and we will sleep when it is all over. And of course, when it's all over, the season will be starting, so I guess we'll never sleep again, but that doesn't matter. So Mo, ding ding me out of here.
Ding ding.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.